our second Shavuos Shir. Last week we had Elu Ve'elu. We spoke about what exactly was given at Har Sinai, different opinions. Meaning, were different opinions given at Har Sinai? Was there one truth? Are there multiple truths? But now I'd like to speak about something that's also very connected to Shavuos. That is how we commemorate what took place at Har Sinai. We typically speak about receiving the Torah. That is true. However, there's a big machlokas in general, in Machshava and in sources, what exactly was given at Sinai. It's quite clear that the entire Torah, the way we know it, was not necessarily given at that moment. I mean, certain things hadn't happened yet, so they couldn't have been given. We know that for a fact. So there's like a machlokas, was it given in big pieces, was it given in small chunks? But even if you hold it was all given at once, it doesn't even really mean all, it means in broad categories. That's its own sugyo, which we're not going to discuss. But certainly one thing we definitely know, because it's in the Torah, one thing for sure that was given, the Aseret HaDibros. And the truth is that many traditional sources, certainly Chazal, as well as later sources, speak about the uniqueness of the Aseret HaDibros. For example, if you look in the opening sources, I'll take one of these actually, we have both from the Medrash and then in Rashi that speak about how, in fact, the Aseret HaDibros are actually a code, a sophisticated code, in which is embedded the entire Torah. For example, the Medrash says, what is darshaning this pasuk? Tells us the Taryag mitzvos belulos behen. The 613 mitzvos are, so to speak, mixed in, balul, into the Aseret HaDibros. V'chein atamotze Taryag osios. I've never done the count, although I guess in computers one could nowadays. But if you go from Anochi, the beginning, until Ad Asher L'Reyecha, 613 letters. But beyond that, which is kind of a cute shticky thing, the larger point the Medrash seems to be saying is the first point, which is that somehow encoded in or interwoven, mixed into the Dibros, are all Taryag. This, even though it is this earlier Medrash, it's actually perhaps most famous as a thought of Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon says this in his Sefer Amunos V'Deos, but in fact it's easier to find because it's in Rashi, in Parshas Yisro, in Shmos, Perek Kafbet. Rashi says, Kol Taryag Mitzvos, B'chlal Aseret HaDibros. Rashi says it straight out, as we just saw, that all Taryag, all 613, are included in the Aseret HaDibros. For Rabbeinu Sadia, Perish, Basaros, she said, B'chol Dibor V'Dibor, Mitzvos HaTulis Bo. And Rav Sadia Gaon, in fact, tries to endeavor to show how the 10 are actually broader categories, and you can approximately fit in 61.3 mitzvos, approximately, of course, into each of the Dibros, so you get the altogether 613. So we know these aren't just the 10 most important or 10 very important, but it's really, really important if you know this hidden, mystical, or even invisible tradition about the Luchos. In fact, the Gemara in Brachos, commenting on a Mishnah in Tamid, tells us that there was a tradition in the Beis HaMikdash to highlight and to stress the importance of the Dibros. Gemara says in source number 2, quoting initially from the Mishnah in Tamid, "Bakorin Aseret HaDibros and Kriya Shema v'Hayim Shemoa v'Yomer," etc., etc. That is to say that the Kohanim, as part of the Avoda, used to highlight certain psukim and make that part of their Avoda. They would publicly recite as part of their Avoda certain psukim, one of which was the Aseret HaDibros. However, the Gemara tells us, now, having finished the quote of the Mishnah, Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Ah Begvulin, Bikshulas, Soskein, Likros. So in the Gvulin, who's in the Gvulin? You're in the Gvulin. Gvulin means outside of Yerushalayim, or at least usually, and in this particular case, outside the Beis HaMikdash. Somewhere within the borders of Israel, in the neighborhood. You're living in suburban Ranana, you're living in Shalavim, you're living in Beit Shemesh. Hey, you know, I went to the Beis HaMikdash, I had to bring a carbon recently, and I was so inspired. What a beautiful thing where they're doing the Aseret HaDibros. Let's do that in our shul. People have this idea. Seems like a nice, wonderful idea, right? Says the Gemara, Ela shekvar bitlum ibnei tarumas haminin. Chazal outlawed it. They said, no, you can't do this. Why? Because we're worried about the confusion of the minim, of the heretics. Now, what does all this mean? Look at Rashi. Bikshu, what did they want to do? L'kva asar sadibros b'kriya shema. Rashi says very specifically that they wanted to merge part of Kriya Shema, the declaration of faith. So why not include the Aseret HaDibros in that recitation? Chazal said no. Why? Mipnei ta'aruma saminim. Rashi says, what was the confusion of the heretics? Shlo yomru lame ha'aretz, ein shar ha'torah emes. In other words, if you highlight, if you give such a unique and special emphasis to the Seser Dibros, what might that confuse people into thinking? That somehow only these 10 perhaps, only these psukim perhaps, are really from Hashem. Maybe the other ones are not just secondary, but worse. Maybe they're not even divine. Maybe they're not even Misinai. Therefore, says the Rashi, to conclude, as a result, Chachamim said no. Now, it's an interesting side note, P.S., historically, who were these minim? Who were these heretics? So if you look in Rashi in your standard Vilna Shas, it will say Akum, non-Jews. However, idol worshippers. If you look in the other authoritative versions, you see the Hashmatas Hatzenzura. You see the Hatzenzura? The censor. The censors changed the Girsa from what used to be. What was the original Girsa, says Rashi? Talmide Yeshu. The early students of Jesus. Talmide Yeshu. Now, I'm not enough of a historian or expert in comparative religion, but it makes kind of sense, a little bit, what you know about Christianity, which very much de-emphasized the law. That was like the generation, Paul, whatever. Again, I don't know enough, and even if I did, I don't want to talk about it. But basically, that was a major emphasis, which as far as I understand, actually happened not from Yeshu, but his Talmidim, where they basically started off, that's how they went from basically being misguided Jews to eventually complete heretics and eventually pagan and ultimately out of the faith completely, but they totally left the law. That was like some earlier covenant. But now in this new covenant with their God, lowercase g obviously, so then they de-emphasized the need and the importance of the commandments. Makes sense then, as perhaps part of that transition, where maybe you can't go from 0 to 60 at once. So perhaps, I'm just speculating, maybe this is what Rashi has in mind, maybe there was a staged process. Maybe initially they said, okay, well, the Ten Commandments, okay, fine, those you have to keep, but we can get rid of 603. And then eventually, maybe they took to the cutting floor even more. But Rashi says, interestingly, just again, it's not at all important for the Shir's larger point, but it's interesting, since it's there, is a historical point, who exactly were these people that were apparently deliberately abusing the tradition. In other words, they could say, well, you see, it's like modern day missionaries, right? How did they try to trick, gullible Jewish kids? By quoting psukim. And you don't know the context, you could have ta'arumas, you could have confusion. So you're also thinking, you really don't have to keep all the laws. How are you going to keep the laws? Well, isn't it true that they only say the Ten Commandments in the Beit HaMikdash? They don't say all the other mitzvos. Ooh, it must be that that's the only ones that you have to keep. Maybe only those are from Sinai. And after all, so because of that confusion and that manipulation, Chachamim said it's not worth it anymore. The loss outweighs the gain, and therefore they stopped doing it.
Are you putting the emphasis on Shema Yisrael after them, when you say Krishma? And all you have to do is love your God, and then there's
no, that's not the only thing we say. That's just part of davening.
So I'm saying, why don't we just add, it's just new, it's part of davening.
Again, apparently there's a certain intuition that there's something unique and special about Asar Sadebros. So if you will then add on to that intuition, you will almost like you will formalize that instinct that people have. That will get, apparently no one had that confusion about those other psukim. That balance is really at the heart of today's shir, as we're just getting into it now. But really, that's the balance. On the one hand, showing proper deference and respect as Hashem Dibros, but not getting to the point where too much of a good thing is in fact not good. And here's the first example of that. We're not saying the Asar Sadebros aren't special. That's why we started off with the Medrash and with Reb Sadji going. But if you overemphasize it, it could lead to a problem. In fact, not only did this happen at an earlier stage in history in the time of the Gemara, the Rashba has a tshuva in which he said people basically, not everyone's such a bucky, not everyone knew the Gemara, but people had an idea. And they asked the Rashba a very simple question. Mahu lomar Asar Sadebros b'shachar beis haknesses? Can we say the Asar Sadebros every morning in davening? So sometimes we think of the Rashba, the great genius, the Rashba, the Tshuva, a Raya here, and a Gemara there, and a Shaila there. This is like the most simple thing anyone could have answered the Shaila. You could have been the Rashba for a day. Rashba says, no, you can't do this in your shul. Well, why not? Who told you? He says, very simple. It's an explicit Gemara Masechta Brachos. Kfar bitlu miteru misaminim kedisim aper kamet brachos. You don't have to be a bucky, you just have to know Masechta Brachos. That's the whole tshuva. There's no razzle dazzle lumdus in the tshuva. People asked the Rashba a very simple question, and he said this, a very simple answer. No, you can't do it. So, but the point is, I guess in all seriousness, until you had that tshuva of the Rashba, perhaps you could argue maybe there's something unique about what was happening in the time of the Gemara, especially with Rashi's historical reference. Maybe if there aren't people who are meaning tricking people, maybe now it should be allowed. The Rashba says, no, we're not going to do it. And in fact, that seemed to have been the accepted minhag. But, here's the first big but. The tour. We just got through saying you shouldn't highlight this Ezer Dibros. Rashba says it's a Gemara. Then says the tour. Tov Lomar, Parshas Akeda, Parshas Haman, the Aseres HaDibros, and Karbonos, every day in davening. Which is in the Siddur. Tov Lomar, among other things, Aseres HaDibros. So the Beis Yosef comments right there in Siman Aleph. The Beis Yosef says, how could the Tur tell us that we should highlight Aseres HaDibros every day? Doesn't that go against Masechta Tamid and Gemara Brachos? Now again, it's not exactly the same thing. Right? It's not exactly the same thing. So we could almost anticipate what the answer is going to be. But the bottom line is, at least in the question, the Beis Yosef is bothered. How could the Tur, in essence, encourage a practice of giving extreme highlight and importance to Aseres HaDibros? Doesn't that run afoul of the Mishnah, the Gemara, and the Rashba? So the Beis Yosef gives a simple answer. And he says, Ikel Meimar, Tehainu Dafka B'tzibur, Aval B'yachid, Alak Mishav Terus Aminim, Tov L'omram, Shadei Kein Yizkor Mamad Har Sinai B'chol Yom, V'titchazek Emunasa B'zeh. Says the Beis Yosef a simple answer. What was the Rashba? What was the Gemara against? The Tzibur, all together chanting the Aseres HaDibros. But that's not what the Torah is recommending. The Torah is recommending each person quietly. You could add after davening, perhaps, Dafka. So say these psukim. That's not a violation, because if you're saying it to yourself, we don't have to worry about anyone else somehow being tripped up or being confused. And he adds, and again, here's part of the balance. After all, saying them quietly is dafka a good thing. After all, it'll remind us of Har Sinai, it'll be mechazek our emuna, etc. Now there are other answers to the question. It's interesting. The Maharshal, the great Maharshal, Yamshal Shlomo in the back of the Gemara, Shlomo Luria, so he actually tells us a personal minhag that he had. I need no heg lomar aseres hadibros kodem baruch shemar bikol ram. Whoa. So he's not relying on this heter now, right? We just said, well, maybe it's okay if you're saying it quietly to yourself. The Marshal puts himself out there and he just says, you know, I want you to know, I'm not advocating something I wouldn't do. I myself do this. But Kol Ram, before Baruch Shamar, he said every day in Shul out loud in front of everybody, Aseres HaDibros. Well, now that we can't use the Beis Yosef's answer, because he did it B'Kol Ram, he didn't allow his voice, what's going to be the legitimacy, what's going to be the defense of how the Marshal do this? He gives his own answer. So what's the issue? Davka Lakova the Birkas Yotzer. What was the problem? Only not how you do it out loud or quietly, but when you do it. If you'll do it as part of the Birkos of Kriya Shema, then it's a problem. Where did he get that from? V'chein Perish Rashi. Remember the Rashi on the Gemara. Rashi said, what do people want to do? They wanted to put it in the Kriya Shema, in the Birkos of Kriya Shema. So apparently, according to the Marshal, that's not just a coincidence, that's not just a historical anomaly. That actually is part of the point. And it goes to the question you asked before. Apparently the potency of combining Shema, which is, Shema, and then you put the Aseres HaDibros there, well, maybe you must be saying something. Just like Kriya Shema is a certain testament of faith, perhaps if you put Aseres HaDibros in there, somehow you're saying that they're more a testament of faith, or something like that. So the Marshal says, that's the problem. But as long as you're not doing it in Kriya Shema, even out loud, in his opinion, it's okay, that's a second possible answer. Yeah.
When you're saying you can't say Aseres HaDibros in Shema, can't you say also that you're promising Shema? Maybe that's
only point. Oh, so he asked before. He asked before. You can't say that because there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to say Shema every day. There is a mitzvah d'oraisa to say Shema. There's no mitzvah d'oraisa to say Aseres HaDibros. If we would have added that, apparently that would have been a problem. Okay? Now it happens to be, if you look in the next source, the Tshuva Yaskil Avdi, that was a Sephardi posek of relatively recent vintage. Yaskil Avdi, who's of Rav Avadya Hadaya, a Sephardi chief rav. So he actually quotes that there's other customs, other communities, where they said it not by Baruch Shemar, like the Marshal, but they said it after davening, but they all said it out loud. And he also, he says, oh, you can defend that Sephardi practice based on this same Maharshal. You could say it based on this Marshal. But then the Yaskil Avdi himself, and this is where I have it underlined, and himself says, I have a better answer. Instead of relying on the Marshal, I'll give you a third different answer, a different approach, and that is that it's only if you do it during davening. It doesn't have to be just during Kriya Shema, like Rashi said, but anything during davening is like a ritual recitation. After all, these are psukim in the Torah, so why can't you read psukim? What could be bad about that? The answer, says the Yaskil Avdi, is that when you take psukim, and you're not just saying them stam, but you're saying them in a certain package and part of davening, so that lends a certain credence and a certain oomph to them. If you're supposed to do that, mato. But that creates more of a problem. It just as an aside, sometimes people ask, how come there's such a big shaila about Yom Halal and Yom Atzmaut or Halal and Yom Yerushalayim? At the end of the day, isn't it just Tehillim? Like, what could be bad about it? So there is some truth to that. But part of the answer, I'm not saying you shouldn't say Halal, but I'm saying part of the reason why it's a shaila, and it's not just as simple as, well, I say Tehillim every day anyway, why can't I say these Tehillim today? Is because you're not just saying Tehillim. You're saying certain Perakim in a certain order, in davening, that gives a certain luster. Now, if it's a good thing, that's even better. But if it's wrong, then it could really be wrong. That's exactly what Rav Yaskil Avdi says here about Asaras HaDibros. When you say them in the context of the ritual, the context of davening, that lends a certain importance and luster, which would, in his opinion, therefore make them problematic. Finally, a last answer to explain why maybe this minhag of people saying Asaras HaDibros every day anyway might be okay, despite Rashba, despite the Gemara, is offered more recently in our generation by the Tzitz Eliezer. And Tzitz Eliezer points out, perhaps I think this is honestly the most simple answer. What did the Torah say? Did the Torah say, Tov Lomar Asaras HaDibros Kol Yom? I mean, he did, but that's not all he said, right? What did the Torah say? So says the Tzitz Eliezer, what was the worry? That we're going to think there's something unique about Asaras HaDibros? Hello? The Torah didn't say only to say them. He said you should say this and this and this and this and this and this. Once you start saying all those 5, 6, 7, 8 other things, by definition, no one's going to confuse to think that Sessa Dibros are so special. I mean, they're important. Okay, you wouldn't say them if not important. And again, that's the balance, because they are important. But this worry that we're going to have that people are going to go over the lines, ooh, maybe these are the only ones that are from Har Sinai. Well, why would anyone do that if they just said 7 other things? Do we worry, ooh, don't say Karbanos, because someone's going to think maybe only the Karban Chatos is from? Come on. And the Parshas Amon, and the this, and the that, Akedah. So it says Eliezer, once we're saying all these other things, you shouldn't have to worry. Now, at the end of the day, all of this is nice and interesting, but largely academic, at least according to the Psak of the Ramah. The Ramah says, Dafka B'Yachid. The Ramah says, for all of these Svaras that are defending certain Minhagim, but for the most part, we don't rely on any of this. Because the Ramah says on the bottom of the page, Dafka B'Yachid Mutar. All these are heterim, which we just gave 4 different reasons why maybe some kind of a public recitation would be okay. It's not in Kriya Shema, it's not in Tefillah, it's with other Psukim. In the end, the Ramah says, really not to rely on any of that. If you're saying it, which is, he really goes with what the Beis Yosef himself said, which is it's one thing if you're doing it in private, but not if you're doing it Osur Lomram B'Tzibor. Okay? However, now we get to the exciting part of the show. We have 15 minutes to the second half of the more exciting. It's all relative. I mean, it's not exciting like, you know, getting taken out to Papagayos is exciting, but, you know, exciting nonetheless. And that is the following. At the end of the day, I'm not going to give a quiz how many of you do Parshas Amon every day, how many of you do the Akedah every day, how many of you do the Sefer HaDibros a day. You do, you don't. It's a nice minhag. That's what the Torah said. It's not an aveira. If you don't do it, it's fine. But what makes this now a uniquely Shavuos a topic? A minhag which is in many, 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 many communities, which is the subject of a very lengthy and stark tshuva of the Rambam. The minhag I'm referring to, of course, is a minhag to stand when you hear the Asaras HaDibros read. How many people do that in their shuls? Stand, everybody? Okay. Okay. So you say, what could be a problem? Well, now you could at least anticipate what the problem is. We see that you're not supposed to do things which would give the impression that part of the Torah is more kadosh than any other part. So if you stand for all of Kriyas HaTorah, if that's your minhag, fine. But if you sit for Kriyas HaTorah, and then you get up for Asaras HaDibros, well, aren't you in essence making the same statement as what the Gemara and the Rashba said you're not allowed to make? Yeah. They are important. Exactly. If they weren't important at all, then we wouldn't ever worry that someone might make the mistake of giving them too much importance. Yeah, this is to me, this is the exciting, interesting part of the shiur, or of the topic. Meaning, it's ironic, but that's the beauty of it. If it wouldn't be important at all, again, I don't want to give an example because then I'll be like a kofar, but take some part of the Torah which you're pretty sure is not so exciting or not so theologically important. So if I would always read that pasuk every day in shul, not a big deal, because no one's going to think, ooh, that you think that such and such a pasuk is more kadosh than the other, you know, thousands of psukim. That's the point. Given the fact that the Asaras HaDibros is special, whether it's mystically special, historically special, philosophically, theologically, all the illies, all of them, it's all special. Yes, it is. So then, if above and beyond all of that, you do something, to use the previous example, you say them out loud in shul, only them, so then that apparently, not that you all of a sudden are necessarily going to get confused. The average person, certainly not the average from person, would. But it gave petah, it gave a certain opening and a certain point in history for these minim, these heretics, whoever they were, to be manipulative and to trick people who didn't know as well as you into thinking, oh, you see, look, well, I see why they're giving so much deference, so much kavod to the Asaras HaDibros. It's because only these are the ones you have to keep. Only these are the ones that are really from Sinai. The other stuff, you know, the rabbis just made it all up. You understand? That's the rub. It never would have worked. That's a big lie, of course. But it never would have been a believable lie if it weren't important. Goof up because it's important means we have to be careful with it. So the question is standing the same kind of a problem? So before I take a question, you have a question on something you don't understand, or you want to give an answer?
That's what we said. That's true.
So hold off. So take a look at the Rambam in number 3. The Rambam in the Tshuva says, in his opinion, this is a big, big no-no and a big problem. The Rambam was asked a shaila from a certain community. First of all, the Rambam points out already in his day, it was a minhag batik, an old minhag in Baghdad, to stand. But the Rambam says he doesn't like that. And he was written by members of a community, in a certain community, where they also used to stand. Not Baghdad, but a different community. They also used to stand. And what happened? They got a new rabbi. So you know what happens when you get a new rabbi. Sometimes the rabbi says, well, I have to do this, because that's what the shul always did. But sometimes the rabbi says, Yakam el chadash. New rabbi, new rules. So the new rabbi came in, and he was mevatel that minhag. He said, you're not allowed to stand for Asaras HaDibros, you have to sit. So what did the balabatim do? Did they just say, well, our rabbi said it, we have to listen? Maybe some of them. But some of them were troublemakers. They said, you can't listen to this rabbi. He's not showing respect. This is always our minhag. We're going to out-rabbi the rabbi. How do you out-rabbi the rabbi? Well, that's nothing. That's just disrespectful. That's not clever. How do we out-rabbi the rabbi? We'll send the shaila to Rabban Shel Yisrael, the Rambam. Could you imagine if they would show up in shul the next year and the rabbis would have to, they would stand, the rabbis would have to sit, and then they'd whip out of their back pocket, aha! The Rambam told us we could do it. Now what are you going to say? So they sent a letter to the Rambam, but they got the surprise of their lifetime, because the Rambam came out with guns blazing to defend the rabbi. And he says, the rabbi, not just because it's good to defend rabbis, I'm just adding a little drama for effect, but because the Rambam really felt that was the right psak. Let's read a little bit of the Rambam. He said, HaTshuva in the middle, Asher hinig harav haniftar liashev hu haroi. Okay, apparently that rabbi had already died. Maybe the Baal Batin killed him, I don't know. So, he says it was the right thing to do. Hu haroi, v'arayosa v'arayos nachonis. His proofs, because the rabbi had said, this is the same thing as the Rashba, as the Gemara and Brachos. The Rambam agrees. Ein lohosev alem, I have nothing to add. Any time there's a shul where the minhag is to stand, we have to go tell them they have to sit down. It's not good. It's this. And he says, and then people tainted. Of course, then they said, but we have another chacham. Some chacham says to the Rambam, but they're already doing it. And if other shuls are doing it, so we should also do it. So the Rambam has a classic line. Lefish im nimsa anashim chacham. What are you going to tell me? If I found in another shul people were sick, lo nachya habari man shehem kadesh yushavim, should we make the healthy people sick so that everyone's equal? What's the difference that other people, you know, this is like classic, right? I mean, kids do this with their parents, right? But so-and-so's parents are letting them, you know, and some adults are just big kids. So they do the same thing they did when they were kids. Rabbi, but in the other shul, in the other community, in the other city, I saw on the internet, you know, that this is allowed. So the Rambam says, you fools, you're healthy right now. They're sick. You want to be sick just because they are? Adarabba, what we should do, instead of saying we should be like them, we should get them healthy. They should be like us. Let them do what's right. And therefore the Rambam says unequivocally, it's usser, to do what you do. It is usser to do what you do. You should not stand for the Aseret HaDibros in the Kriya. That is the psak, unequivocally, of the Rambam in the Tshuva. Yeah.
So he's telling them that it's us for them to stand only because it's only place to stand, but if they would stand...
I think, yeah. You see from this that apparently the minhag was to sit for Krishna Torah. Right? 100%. Yeah, if you're standing for the whole thing, then what could be the problem? I don't think Rambam would have any problem with that. Happens to be, Rav Avadi Yosef has a tshuva. I didn't put it on the sheet. Where Rav Avadi Yosef says, we have to go like Rabbeinu Harambam, Rabbeinu Moshe. And therefore, he also paskins its osur. And then they ask the Ravaji, but look at all the other shuls, look at all the other poskim who are defending the minhag, which we're going to get to in a second. So he suggests, a little bit implausibly, they never saw that Rambam. But if these poskim, if these communities would have been aware of this, again, it's not like it's in the Mishnah Torah or something. The Tshuvas HaRambam, not everyone knows about it. It's a little bit more esoteric, that's true. But he says, still a little bit implausibly, all these poskim, all these communities that had this minhag, and all these Rabbanim who defend the minhag, it's just because they didn't know about the Rambam. I mean, they were mistaken, but they wouldn't have made the mistake if they knew about the Rambam. Because who would have had the chutzpah to go against this tshuva of the Rambam? And therefore, now that the tshuva is known, obviously every shul in every community, Ashkenazim, i.e., who stand, should realize the right way of the Sfardim, of course, and then everyone should not do this anymore. That's Rav Avadi's psak. Nevertheless, the truth is that it's a very, very, very widespread minhag to stand, and many, many poskim, very much aware of the Rambam, and of course the Gemara and the Rashba, have suggested different reasons to defend the minhag, including a number of Svardi poskim. And what I want to share with you is four or five, just we'll wrap up the shir now, but four or five different possible reasons, some more technical and some a little bit more fundamental or profound, to explain what is, I imagine, the minhag of Shalavim, it's the minhag in pretty much every shul that I've ever been in, to stand for the reading of the Aseret HaDibros. Okay? Did you want to say something now? You want to ask something?
Yeah, didn't we say before that nowadays we don't really have those heretics nowadays to say, oh, I see that, it's more important?
Well, I don't remember if I said something like that, but we are going to say something like that right now. So, yeah, excellent. Very prescient, to use a fancy word. Number one. The Yaskil Abdi, again, we'll go back to Rav Avadi Hadaya, who is a Sephardi posek. So you see, it's not just Ashkenazim versus Sephardim. We actually have another Sephardi tshuva in a second. But the Yaskil Abdi quotes from an earlier source, the Bechor Shor. And the Bechor Shor says, I'll give you a very simple reason. You know why we don't have this issue? B'mneita ha'idna lekaminim. What does that mean, lekaminim? There are plenty of heretics who are alive nowadays. But this particular phenomenon of people who are claiming the dafka, these psukim, yeah, we believe in Sinai, we believe in the Ten Commandments, but just nothing else. That particular belief, either it doesn't exist, or at least it's not believable anymore, it's not attractive. The problem is not a problem anymore. That's the bottom line. That's what the Bechor Shor says. He points out that even before we get to the issue of standing, he's actually coming to explain something earlier, which is that even though we have this tshuva of the Rashbah, who had said to somebody, yeah, don't stand, and it is a Gemara in Brachos, but for whatever reason, all the other great poskim, including the Rif, the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, and the Rush, they never quote Lahalacha, the Gemara in Brachos, that you're not supposed to say the Aseret HaDibros in Shul. So why not? Why don't they quote it? So the Bechor Shor suggested that already in the time of the early Rishonim, forget now, in the early Rishonim, there was not a problem anymore of these meaning. So Yaskel Avdi, who's now writing in the 20th century, he says that so too, hu hadinami, we can explain the reason why our minhag is to stand is because the fear is no longer there. There was never anything inherently wrong with giving a little extra priority to Saras HaDibros. After all, they are very important. And that's what they did in the Mesa Mikdash. They gave an extra priority. So he says the only problem was because of circumstances. But if the circumstances change, halacha can change. Now this is what I would call a very technical answer. Yes, you're right, in theory there's a problem, but Lamaisa, in this particular case nowadays, there is no problem. That's answer number one. Number two, the Chida, a great Sephardi posek, perhaps one of the greatest, in his Tshuvas Tuv Ayin, he gives a different explanation. It's reminiscent of what we saw a few minutes ago from the Tzitz Eliezer, but he's writing way before the Tzitz Eliezer, and he's writing about the standing part. He says, you know why there's no problem? Hocha shekorin b'sefer Torah, kol Torah midi midei Shabbos b'Shabbato. It's not like we only read Aseres HaDibros. Every week we're reading another whole parsha. Plus, on the very week, whether it's Yisro v'Eschanan or Shavuos, on the very weeks where we're reading Aseres HaDibros, we're reading other psukim. So says the Tuv Ayin, we have to look at the big picture. What's the big picture? The big picture is, obviously, we believe in these other psukim. We read them also. So yes, someone might take the impression that we stand dafka for these psukim, that maybe there's something extra important about these psukim. But the fact, the fear that they're going to go all the way off the edge and drop off a cliff and say only these psukim are Torah Misinai, says that to the eye, we don't really have to worry about that because we're reciting and reading the larger Kriyas HaTorah. We're reading other psukim. Every Shabbos we read psukim. There's hundreds of psukim that we'll read that are just Yadav Hashem Moshe Leimor, or so and so is the name of so and so, from the tribe of so and so. All these psukim, which no one would think are somehow uniquely superior, yet we read them also. Haraya, because we believe in all of them. No, again, they were. The earlier discussion was about saying the psukim on the Sefer Devarim and Davar. Right? No, but you're right that is similar to what we said that Tzitz Eliezer, who was defending those minhagim who did say Aseres HaDibros out loud in davening, he said even the Torah, but said say other psukim. So just like the Tzitz Eliezer said, just like by saying other psukim, that mitigates the problem. So the Tuv Ayin says, well, if we're reading other parshios of the Torah, or reading the whole Yeschan and the whole Yisro, etc., we don't have to worry that because you're standing, people are going to fall off the cliff and think that that's the only true part. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he suggests an answer. He shares an answer that his son offered, Rav David Feinstein, who should live and be well. Rav David Feinstein said something similar. Not that we read other psukim, but we stand at other psukim. What other psukim do we stand for? Az Yashir. What else? The end of every sefer. So says Rav David Feinstein, if we only stood for Aseres HaDibros, maybe there'd be a problem. But since we stand for other things, and no one ever had a hobby, there was no sect of Minim who ever said, oh, Az Yashir, that's the part that's given at Sinai. That's from Hashem, but nothing else. That, well, coincidentally, the last few words of each sefer. So since we stand for those two, Haraya, said of David Feinstein, that standing is not our way of saying this is more true than anything else. So if we stand for other things, that also mitigates the problem. The Tshuvas V'Hanhagos, from Moshe Sternbach, he suggests a compromise. He says, listen, these are all nice ideas, but no, some people are always worried. So he has a different Eitza. You know what his Eitza is? Just stand up a few words or a few psukim before the Aseres HaDibros. You don't have to wait and time it until, right, Anochi, and stand up. At the last Dibra, sit down. Stand up for the whole Aliyah. Aliyah doesn't begin with the Aseres HaDibros, it doesn't end with the Aseres HaDibros. I try to do that. Or you don't have to do the whole Aliyah, stand up a pasuk before. He says, once you're standing up from some other pasuk, which is clearly not uniquely special, that also, he thinks, maybe solves the problem. Huh? Start from the Iliad. Okay. Last but not least, but this will conclude. I'm going to cheat and take an extra few minutes because I can't end without sharing this last idea from Soloveitchik. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea. It's written up in a number of places in his name, including in the Sefer Harei Kedem. Beautiful idea. And he takes a step back. Who here is a Balkari? Anybody? Okay, I should have known. So do you know the difference between Tam Elyon and Tam Tachton? You know those words? Tam Tachton is the Tam Tachton are the Ta'amim that all of us learn for our Bar Mitzvah. That's the Ta'amim that we see. And that begins each Pasuk and ends each Pasuk with a Sof Pasuk. Correct? That's Tam Tachton. However, for the Esar Sedibros and only them, there's a second parallel set of Ta'amim called Tam Elyon, which break up the Psukim, excuse me, break up the words, be more precise, break up the words not into Psukim, but into Dibros. So like the early Dibros, which are a few Psukim, but if you read them and if you look at the Tam Elyon, it's all one big Pasuk. You don't get to a self Pasuk until the end of Anochi. And conversely, if you get to the other later Dibros, which are like two words, Lot, Tiknov, Lot, so those, you have the Sof Pasuk right away. Tam Elyon divides it up by Dibros. Tam Tachton is the same Tamim we have for every other Pasuk in the Torah, which divides it up based on Psukim. So Rav Soloveitchik said, why, what's the real difference? Why would we read one or the other? It's very simple. Kriyas HaTorah all year round, what is that in essence? It's public Talmud Torah. It's really Talmud Torah. So Talmud Torah is broken up and is structured by the Psukim. There's actually a halacha that we're not allowed to stop the Psukim and break them up into any other order. So Gemara says, Kol Pasuk Delo Pasuk Moshe Anan Lo Paskinan. Any stop, any break that Moshe didn't make, meaning that wasn't given at Sinai, we're not allowed to break up Psukim and change around the order. That's an Aveira. So when we are learning Torah at a typical Shabbos or typical Kriyas HaTorah, we use the breaks of the Psukim. Tam Tachton. What's Tam Elyon? Tam Elyon divides it up by the Dibra. Why? Because when we do that, said Rabbi Soloveitchik, it's because in addition to the regular Talmud Torah aspect, there's a new dimension of the Kriyas HaTorah. What is that? A recreation and a reenactment of Mamad Har Sinai. At Har Sinai, they were given Dibra by Dibra by Dibra. So when we read Tam Elyon, said Rav Soloveitchik, we're doing that because we're not just reading it to fulfill a mitzvah. Check, yotze, check, yotze. It's like Lahavdil, like Colonial Williamsburg. We're reenacting Ma'amad Har Sinai, in which these psukim were given to us not as psukim, but as dibros, and broken up as dibros. Therefore, said Rav Soloveitchik, if we read the dibros in Tam Elyon because we're reenacting, what else happened at Har Sinai? What were the Jews doing? They were standing. So said Rav Soloveitchik, the reason we stand at Har Sinai is not just the Baal Koreh, who Lahavdil is kind of acting like Hashem or Moshe in broadcasting the Dibros, but everyone else in the shul is standing as if they were Jews standing around the base of the mountain. That is part of our reenactment. We're also part of the story. Ain't Melech Bo'am. What's the difference if there's a Kabbalah, if there's a Matan Torah without a Kabbalah Satorah? It's worthless. We have to be there, so we're reenacting it. And therefore, he says, that's why. All the worry about standing or highlighting Aseres HaDibros, that's if you're talking about just the Kedusha of the Psukim. So why are you standing? But if there's a very good reason why we're standing, because we're reenacting the way they were given, so then that says so beautifully, that would never be a problem, even according to the Rambam. What do you mean, even according to the Rambam? He suggests that maybe where the Rambam lived, the Minhag was to read with Aseres HaDibros in the Tam Tachton. And in fact, in different shuls, Ara Yom HaZeh, there are different minhagim. Some shuls will do only Shavuos with Tam Elyon, and Ashanan and Yisro with Tam Tachton. Many, many shuls, the ones that I'm more familiar with, do everything with Tam Elyon, all three. But there could be different minhagim. Rav Soloveitchik was meduyak. I'm not saying every shul holds like Rav Soloveitchik. But he was meduyak. He felt that you only would have a legitimate right to stand if you were reading Tam Elyon, because then that's part of the whole reenactment. If you're doing Tam Tachton, then it's like every other Kriyas HaTorah, and then you shouldn't stand, because that might be a violation of the theme of Masechta Brachos. Okay, everyone should